Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello, and welcome to Alaska Edition on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Ellen Lockyer. The past Tuesday, Republican voters in 12 states and American Samoa went to the polls to indicate which of the Republican candidates they wanted for the party's nomination for the 2016 presidential race. Results of the so-called Super Tuesday poll are an indication of which of the candidates may win the nomination, although it is not a guarantee of a lock on the nomination. And later this month, Alaska Democrats will conduct a poll to find out which Democratic candidate is most preferred for the presidential race nomination for that party. Today on Alaska Edition, we'll review the results of the Republican poll in light of Alaska and in light of what an Alaska win may or may not mean for a candidate on a national level. First, let's introduce our guests. John Arono is a reporter and political commentator for the online publication Alaska Commons. Hello, John.
Hey.
Richard Maurer is a longtime Alaska print journalist, now an editor with the Alaska Dispatch News in an editorial capacity. Hello, Rich.
Hi.
And our own Zachariah Hughes is a reporter with Alaska Public Media, and he covers Anchorage issues. Hello, Zach.
Hi, Ellen.
So let's get right down to it. This Tuesday, Ted Cruz took the winning slot in the what they're calling the Republican presidential preference poll. Is that it? Mm-hmm. And he was just barely ahead of Donald Trump in most precincts. But polling locations were set up in churches and community halls all around the state. And by all accounts, the turnout was very strong, exceeding previous records. I was in Palmer Tuesday afternoon, and there was 100 people standing in line in this freezing wind, either registering as Republicans and waiting for their turn to vote. So it was a very strong turnout. I think it was very exciting. And our video crew did go out and do a little bit of a poll of their own. So let's see what happened in Anchorage, at least.
I voted for Ted Cruz. I'm looking for somebody who's conservative. Up until this morning, I thought I was going to be voting for Donald Trump. But he has a history of being a liberal and not being pro-life.
I'm going to vote for Donald Trump today. I think he's going to make America great again. I mean, we just need to get over some of the bad things, and he's promised that we'll be happy again. America will be good.
Ted Cruz, I find him most honest, and following the Constitution is what I think we need to get back to. He says what he means, and he means what he says, I believe.
I voted for Trump. Basically, they are all the same. They always say something and do nothing. So the best shot for something, anything to be done, I believe, is Donald.
Ted Cruz, he's the only logical candidate, in my opinion. He'll keep the values that we cherish here in Alaska. This is a conservative state.
I'm hoping for somebody who's going to support our oil and gas industry.
I think the majority of people here in Alaska do support Cruz.
I think Alaska's going to vote Cruz. Yeah. A lot of my friends live out of state. They seem to think Trump, but I think it's Cruz.
So there you have it, some Alaska voters, looking like working class voters, too. So the votes were on paper ballots. They were hand counted. And at the end of the night, Ted Cruz emerged with 36% of the vote, Donald Trump with 34%, and that was pretty much standard throughout all the districts. So, Zachariah Hughes, you were covering the election central, so to speak, for Alaska Public Media. What did you see Tuesday night?
It was not a dramatic scene, I'll put it that way. It was downtown at the Lofts Hotel in Anchorage, and right above the bar on the third floor ballroom, there were some people from the Alaska GOP that were there staffing and kind of updating numbers as they came in from around the state. You know, I think one of the interesting things about this, the PPP, the presidential preference poll, is that it's fairly informal. It feels almost kind of like I don't know if some of the others would agree with me, but almost like a family affair where people from Craig and Bethel and Barrow and Nome and Palmer and Wasilla are texting in headquarters with their results as they're counting it locally. And a lot of the people there... let me take that a step back. There were not a lot of people there. It was a little bit more some consultants, some media figures from within conservative circles, some of the party officials kind of all there. And, it felt very much, I don't want to say insular, but people knew each other. There was some collegiality there. And it went till about midnight. As, you know, things were coming in, people were, kind of reading out numbers and doing the math out loud about, you know, who was going to take what. So that was sort of the scene down there.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Alaska Republican Party Chairman Peter Goldberg says the voter enthusiasm is based pretty much on dissatisfaction with the Obama administration. Now, how did Ted Cruz work that into his campaign in Alaska?
You know, I would be really curious to see what John and Rich have to say about it, because I think we're all probably hearing similar but different things. And, Mr. Goldberg, with the chairman for the party, cannot play favorites, does not play favorites, won't say the whys and stuff like that. Rich might disagree with me there. A lot of the other people, the consultants and folks kind of around the room, their read on it was, you know, Cruz didn't win. Trump and Cruz won. Those were the clear front runners. If you look at their numbers in most of these districts, even the places where there's a landslide between them, it's 12 points apart, something like that. You know, it was the difference between about 36% and 34%. And in most of the districts, they're neck and neck. And what I heard a lot of people saying was, you know, this is just two different flavors of anti-establishment thinking and inclinations. Those numbers that you referred to as far as robustness, this was a robust turnout. And a lot of people down at headquarters were a lot more eager to, say that this was 50% up the last best year for turnout. And to them, that was a bigger story.
Well, that's huge. Let's bring John in. Oh, go ahead.
I could say.
Rich.
Speak. Okay. So you were absolutely right about sort of these the numbers not being very far apart. I mean, when you look at the delegates, there's one delegate difference between Cruz got, 12 delegates, and Trump got 11. So it's a virtual tie. They both got equal benefit from these numbers. The other thing is that while they're saying turnout was really spectacular, there's a real concern in this entire country about how not so much the actual election, but how candidates are chosen. They're generally chosen by small numbers of people, whether it's a caucus, whether it's a convention, whether it's people in a smoke-filled room. You got 22,000 people who in Alaska who turned out for this Republican event. Yes, it's 50% more than last time, but it's a tiny number of voters and from a tiny segment of the population. So to call this in any way a broad-based assertion of the mood of the voters, I think is a little out of touch.
True.
I think it's important.
John, come on in.
Yeah,
I wanted to ask you. First of all, Ted Cruz has never even been to Alaska, as far as I know.
He has.
Yes.
Okay. In 2014, he came up during the Senate contest between Mark Begich and Dan Sullivan to stump for Dan Sullivan. So he got to know the electorate a little bit. Mm-hmm. I was actually in Dallas following Cruz's campaign on Super Tuesday. I was on the ground, attended his rallies, and I think that the point about the feeding off the negativity and the disapproval. And if you listen to Ted Cruz on the stump, one term stands out, and that's that he talks about everything that is wrong in American society, whether it's, we're not treating our veterans right, teachers aren't getting paid enough, or whatever the issue, he brings it back to this term, the Obama-Clinton economy. And he usually speaks for about a half hour. You'll hear that term at least a dozen times. It's interesting because the role of Secretary of State doesn't really have much, purview in terms of domestic economics. But it's this real linkage, every problem back to the Obama-Clinton economy. And it's been a really effective message for him. He's had a lot of success. Mm-hmm. The people in Texas, that's his home state. He was flanked by former Governor Rick Perry, current Governor Greg Abbott, Representative Louie Gohmert. And it looked like a Trump rally.
So how important is a win in Alaska for Cruz? He only took three states, Alaska, Texas, and Oklahoma, oil states, by the way.
Well, I think every state that is not a direct Trump win, and again, the overall delegate counts, I think, is really important to point out. Trump only has a little over 300 delegates so far. Cruz is a little over 200. Rubio's down a little over 100. You need about 1,200 total. So I think that you're right that we've overstated Cruz's dominance so far. But every state he can take away, or at least stay competitive in the delegate count, gets us closer to nobody getting 51% of the delegates and having this go all the way to the convention.
Right. A delegate vote is a delegate vote, and they're all scrambling for those 1,200-plus votes.
Scrambling is a good word.
Yeah, scrambling, one at a time. Cruz did really well in Fairbanks, military areas, parts of the Matsu, but is there an explanation for that? Do you have any idea?
It's a weird year.
I don't know if this is anything or not, but I would say a couple things. I would say where people were mad, they tend to vote for Trump. And if you look at sort of not just the Matsu or Fairbanks, but you look southeast, Ketchikan, where they're probably still mad about closing the mill. They all came out for Trump. All of Fairbanks is Cruz territory, and maybe that has to do with some of the evangelicals up there in North Pole area. Perhaps maybe they're not so mad there. Wasilla was Trump. Big Lake is Trump, and I think people are. People are mad there.
Right. It's funny. Trump is tapping into that anger. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the spread, it is sort of puzzling why people in Spinard and Wasilla and northwestern Matsu would favor Trump, who is certainly the antithesis of the rugged Alaska image. Go ahead, Seth.
Can I just throw one thing in? Yeah. I mean, one thing that I heard making sense of that I actually find pretty compelling is that a Republican consultant that I spoke with at party headquarters there, his read on the situation, he was also a little bit surprised. He'd actually voted for Kasich. And his read on it was where you saw Cruz do well was where you saw Miller do well. Mm-hmm. And this 2014 kind of Senate bid and then earlier on. And so these rail belt communities, it was Kenai that Cruz did well. It was in some of the South and that was Trump territory. But Kenai up through the Matsu Valley into Fairbanks, those were really where Cruz kind of took some of the balance away from Trump. Nowhere did Trump fall flat in any of those communities. It's just that Cruz did a little bit better, and they were both kind of the top two candidates. Where you saw Trump do better was out in the bush. I mean, Barrow, these aren't, huge things, but Barrow went for Trump. Nome went for Trump. Ketchikan went for Trump. Some of the other southeast communities, I believe Dutch went for Trump. So I think that's a sort of interesting divide to me. And I think the evangelical vote, I think some of the more Christian conservative social values that Cruz has been a little bit more consistent on, let's say, in his messaging, I think that's some of where the divide goes. But, again, it's I find it very compelling to hear that these guys are, both the anti-establishment, and that's what really won out in the messaging on Tuesday.
How did social media figure into this? We have a TV reality star, if that's the word. Mm-hmm. We have people in Bush communities maybe plugged into the TV a little more, and they know his name. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we're seeing a changing of the guard in terms of how candidates market themselves. We're not seeing the major ad buys that we did just a few years ago. I think it's a really interesting dynamic among Tea Party and evangelicals who have a lot of online presence. And it is strange the way you're mapping out how certain districts, paralleled. They've supported Miller, and now they supported Cruz. And you also have the Sarah Palin endorsement of Donald Trump, which might, see wives. Wasilla maybe went more for Trump. Maybe those are, Sarah Palin loyalists, the holdouts for that. But it's interesting because Sarah Palin also was a firm Miller supporter. So the decision to go for Trump, obviously, I'm guessing she just smelled an opportunity to get her name back in the headlines for a little bit. But it seems kind of arbitrary and probably confusing to a lot of conservative voters that, she endorsed Cruz back when he first ran.
So, true. And let's get back to the Miller thing for a bit. Because, Rich Maurer, you've seen some pretty wild elections come and go in your time. And when Senator Lisa Murkowski, sitting senator, was sure to get the primary nomination for...
She thought so.
She thought so. And then there was a Republican caucus in Fairbanks. This is 2010. And the Tea Party folks showed up en masse, and somehow or other they got Joe Miller on the election ballot. And threw Murkowski under the bus. But then what happened?
Well,
speaking of social media.
Obviously, then she, she established a grand coalition that included very strong Native support and other things, and fear of who Joe Miller was, and sort of moderate Republicans, moderate Democrats wrote her in, and she won as a write-in candidate, which was, I think, the first time that's ever happened.
Second time.
Yeah.
South Carolina mm-hmm. was Strom Thurmond got in on a write-in, but still.
Also well-known,
yes,
far more well-known, yeah. perhaps. Yeah.
Well, so there's been some pretty wild mm-hmm. Alaska election events over the years. Alaska is not noted for its plain, run-of-the-mill way of doing anything.
But you could say that for the entire United States.
I guess so. These days, yeah. So this presidential preference poll, actually, mm-hmm. according to the Juneau Empire, is not really a poll because it is not state-run. It's not really a caucus because everybody's involved. So why is it so important? Somebody tell me about how the delegates are counted and how that works out according to the poll.
Well, we have Alaska turns out to have quite a few Republican delegates. I think we said as many as Iowa does, and that's because parties tend. This is all strictly a party decision. Parties reward states that have their party in charge. Alaska has very few Democratic delegates. It has quite a few Republican delegates. New York has probably few Republican delegates and quite a few Democrat ones, just because of those party rules, and so you know we're probably more important in this presidential thing than we will be when we have our puny three electoral votes in the final contest.
Mm-hmm. We have puny three.
Yeah, well, it's yeah, no. Rich is absolutely on point. I mean,
right.
Our whole the way that I'd like to put it is the delegate selection process only makes sense if you're that level of drunk where you just nod along. there is a partisan loyalty component, which basically, so you know, every congressional district, our grand total of one is three delegates, and then you also have additional delegates selected for each of your senators. But then, if you've had, you know, if you had Senator Dan Sullivan's recent election, that awards another delegate. Mm-hmm. If you have a Republican governor, if you have a Republican-controlled legislature, there's all sorts of kind of, you know, partisan bonuses that actually is going to give us a bigger voice if we do get to the convention and there hasn't been a candidate with the majority of support.
So is the Republican Party in Alaska attempting to put the brakes on Trump as strongly as in other states and the national level? Are we hearing from our Alaska Republicans that they're scared of Trump? Or
I know that I want to say Senator Liesl McGuire and House Majority Leader Charisse Millette months ago wrote an op-ed supporting Trump and saying that his mm-hmm. candidacy was refreshing and something new and welcome. That's, you know, the number of Republican lawmakers willing to step out on a limb and support Trump has pretty much dwindle down to Sarah Palin the more he makes statements as he is wont to do. You know, he does say some controversial things that might cause pause for someone otherwise wanting to get out ahead and give him an endorsement.
Go ahead, Zach.
I guess for me, one of the interesting things is that it almost seems like you've got parallel campaigns within conservative constituencies. And you know, definitely my read on the room and from what I was hearing at Republican Central on Tuesday night was, you know, from people that have a professional stake and a professional interest in the Republican principles through a party, you know, which is to say institutionalized kind of party representation, I don't think they're very enthusiastic about Trump. In fact, I think in Alaska, it's probably not as intense as in some other places, but it's not hostile towards Trump. I've never heard kind of overt hostility coming from party leadership or anything like that. But those aren't the people that you're going to see out of the polls. Those aren't the people that are signing up, you know, in relative droves to become Republicans to vote in this. You know, one of the Peter Goldberg, the chairman of the party, said that in Craig, you know, I think 76 ballots were cast, something around there. 10 of those were new people that signed up for the first time. So I think a pessimistic reading of that is that it's opportunistic, it's selective, it's just kind of people wanting to jump on the bandwagon at this stage who probably aren't loyal voters. you know, an optimistic reading of that is that Trump is bringing more people into the party, which has been his contention throughout, that he's bringing people into a bigger, more representative party. But I think what you're seeing right now is this cleave between the, you know, let's call them the establishment or the stakeholders in institutional party apparatus that are really getting allergic to a lot of what he's saying, and then a lot of people that, you know, would not be political were it not for a candidate that they think feel bucks established expectations. Mm-hmm. So I think those parallel tracks that you're seeing emerge is a pretty interesting thing, and I definitely got a flavor for that and stuff like the video that we saw. And,
right. Well, I saw it myself in Palma. There was 100 people there and guys with clipboards. Are you Republicans? Signing them right up. CNBC reports just today that the upcoming poll in Florida, the 15th of the month, may change things. That's Marco Rubio's home state. Marco Rubio did not do well here. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And
he did better than Kasich.
He did better than some of the others.
And that's also going to be the make or break day for Kasich. You know, his home state of Ohio. Those are the two big ones on the 15th. Is Florida and Ohio. They're all winner take all states. If Trump were able to pull off, you know, victories in both Ohio and Florida, this thing's pretty much locked for him. He wouldn't have much, you know, he'd just have to make sure he kind of keeps his own with the delegates after that. If he only gets one, then he's going to have a tougher job, Trump will, because then he has to get around 57% of the delegates left. If for whatever reason Trump tanks and doesn't win Ohio or Florida, then he's got to get two-thirds of all the remaining delegates to end up with a majority before the convention. And, yeah, Rubio's down between 7 and 20 points, depending on the poll. That is not good for your home state, and it's also great for Ted Cruz, who can then take a Rubio loss in Florida and say he's not legitimate. He couldn't even win his home state because Cruz did pull off an impressive victory in Texas.
I think that'd be the kindest remark that we heard.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Well, I'm surprised Cruz and Rubio haven't figured this out by themselves yet and said one of us is going to step down and throw our support behind somebody else. Why not? Rich.
Well, that's easy for us to say. I think, you know, you could go to the Anchorage Assembly and say the same thing. Why, you know, you got a West Anchorage district where you got two very similar candidates, mm-hmm. Ira Perman and Eric Croft. Why can't they figure it out? You know, they can't. You know, it's people have asked them to figure it out, and sometimes people think that they're too important to do that.
Well,
and
that's
really
good
prideful,
for the voters.
Prideful yeah. people. You know?
Right.
And when you look at Marco Rubio, he has spent his entire life, you know, in a trajectory to run for president. He's not going to have his Senate seat after this. You know, and Ted Cruz, kind of a similar trajectory, but, you know, as much as he likes to be the outside against the mainstream person, this is a guy who was in the Bush White House, who argued cases before the Supreme Court.
Went to Princeton.
Went to Yale and Harvard Law School, too. You know, this is a very institutional character. You know, worked under Rick Perry in the Texas. I'm forgetting that office, but you know, this is a guy who has come up through the ranks in government.
And could appeal to Latino working class voters and the some people who support Trump say, yes, the Republican Party has been trying to get working class voters to get onto their party agenda. And Trump is doing that. Surprisingly enough, a billionaire is like pulling these people in, where us detractors of Trump within the party say, well, he has no diplomatic skills. And his yesterday's debate, wherever it was, Detroit, I was reading in the Daily Beast today that it was basically devolved into childish insults. No debate, no points taken. Is it too late for a third person, another person to jump in?
Like the Mitt Romney scenario?
Right.
Mike Bloomberg, I think a lot of people are kind of keeping that as a, you know, a Trump card, no pun intended.
But. Well, look what happened in Alaska's last gubernatorial election. Mm-hmm. Speaking of weird Alaska mm-hmm. elections. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
As Alaska goes, so goes the nation.
we've longed
for them to say.
Well, one of the biggest complaints about Alaska, Alaska's big complaint against the federal government is federal overreach. Yet our two winning candidates in the Republican poll, Cruz and Trump, have very, very different ideas on that. Can anyone fathom that one?
It's so interesting how you know, the real marching orders and the talking points among the GOP in Washington, D.C. over the past 7 years is, you know, federal overreach and abuse of the Constitution. And then we're talking about Donald Trump, who every time he speaks talks about throwing the Constitution out the window and just doing things that he wants to do. It's interesting that given the rhetoric over the past 7 years, this is the guy so many people seem to be going with.
Right. And part of that, as I believe personally, this is my personal opinion, I mean, he had years on television as this. He's been in the news since I can remember for one thing or another. And he puts himself in the news. He had this, Trump had this reality show, and now that's hugely popular. Name recognition is everything. It was basically free advertising for his future presidential run, and he probably had this in the back of his mind all along.
Well, it's, I mean, we've seen a lot of talk about how, you know, President Obama leads from behind, and he's weak on foreign policy, and he's weak and weak and weak and weak. Okay. Donald Trump is the strongman. He's the bully. He's the guy that's had a persona on television, you know, over the past decade that just exudes strength and control and power. I think that there is built a demand for someone like that.
One thing I want to add on to that is that Ben Carson did win Bethel. And I think that's some point we've
We've been holding that one
into our hearts. Well, we are running out of time, and that has been a wonderful half hour. And I would like to say thank you to our guests, Richard Maurer, Zachariah Hughes, John Arono. I'm your host, Ellen Lockyer, and Alaska Edition will be back next week, with another wonderful topic of public interest. Thanks for tuning in.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.